Hello?
Hello, Cliff. This is Gerben de Vries. We emailed together.
Yes, hello.
Oh, hi. Good morning for you, right?
Yes, good morning for me.
Good morning. Okay. Well, I'm here with Sinclair and 22 other friends. So we basically have some questions and maybe if you could talk a bit with us. So I'm now gonna pass you through to Michael. So maybe he can talk a bit and some questions.
Sure, no problem.
Hi Cliff, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you well. How is my sound quality?
Good, from here it's good. So we're here with about 18 friends that are still here. This is towards the end of the meeting now that we had some really very high level, very interesting, intense meeting over 3 days, and this is now the evening of the last, actually second last day. Tomorrow we meet one more time. And so we have come to some preliminary conclusions about that we feel we know it's time to act, and every one of us is trying to get ready in some ways for himself, for herself, or together in teams. And no one has so far read your last report simply because we were very busy and also kind of without real internet access for a while. Did you send out the second report last night?
Yes, I did. Yes.
So we have not read it, and so I was going to ask you, would it be possible that you could quickly summarize a little bit? Because none of us has been able to read it. A few of us are subscribers of you, but we have not seen it. So this would be helpful if you could fill us in a little bit for the number two part.
Sure, no problem. There's a segment within markets suggesting that a very large push will be done by the powers that be for propaganda purposes, and that it will begin a little earlier than we had anticipated. And thus, we think there might be a plunge protection team propping up of the banks from now through about May 14th or so before things start deteriorating. Beyond that,
Yes, we heard that.
okay, yeah, yes, beyond that, the dollar is already under pressure, and we've got a pretty good timeline that extends out to about mid-August, and then there's a with downward pressure on the dollar. And actually all currencies, a real upset within the currency structure itself. And this will relate to the Chinese counterfeiting of specialty gold coins, but it will also relate to some scandals coming out from within the banking community. Further scandals and further emotional upset, distancing the banking and powers that be from the populace. And this will continue through to about mid-August. There will be a slight hiatus due to other issues arising, and then it will resume with a vengeance on October 26th. The October 26th through November 5th date will seemingly be a background issue. And then on November 5th, the administration of the U.S. and the powers that be will find itself in a very dire set of circumstances that will extend all through to end of February 2010.
Yes, we heard that so far.
Okay, then in addition, over the next 3 weeks, we're going to discover that the new lands issue, especially around Tonga down through towards Macquarie Island, is accelerating. The impact on the coast is probably already underway. And what we were picking up for our global coastal phenomena probably relates to the expression of the language following the discovery of the event. So because the Tongan volcano is now producing new land that apparently has risen above the ocean surface in at least one area, and because the magma movement continues, there will apparently be more growth underseas. But the general mainstream populace or mainstream media and the populace as a whole will not necessarily start discussing this with any kind of seriousness until about mid-May. But as we have surmised, the global coastal phenomena is well underway at this point and will be affecting us from May through into the fall, again with some level of seriousness. We expect to soon start seeing some level of disruption of Pacific Coast ports as a result of the ongoing problems over these next 3 weeks in the southern oceans.
Yes.
Beyond that, we're now also getting a change within the lexicon itself. We've had these in the past. An example was when we started off in the year 1999 and into 2000, we had Bush administration allied with the corporations, which gradually broke up over time. So our original entity was called Bush Co. as a conjunction of those two, and it eventually came down to merely the Bushistas, which were the hardcore cadre that supported the right-wing neocon view. And over time, we saw that the corporations and the press had fallen away from Bush as a whole, and that was a change within the lexicon that we had to plot and take steps to capture. And at this point, we now have a similar situation arising.
Yes, go on.
We have a similar situation arising in that we have a new entity that we're posting about that we're going to call Omni-Humanity. We say this because it has a very large space component and is not limited to the planet Earth. However, we cannot, as of this point, explain what that component will be because the entity is still vague and in the process of shaping itself. But there is a new phenomena that will occur within humans that we are describing as hyper-croniacs. The croniac component refers to time. We believe that there is going to be some level of change within the populace at some small level, say perhaps as few as 1,000, but maybe as large as 50,000 individuals, who will be somehow living in time or affected by time in a way different from the main populace of the planet. Did that make sense?
Totally. Yes.
The hypercroniacs. The hypercroniacs are apparently appearing now, and we're finding that the largest percentage of emotional values is coming from bespoke fear components within the powers that be entity.
Yes?
Yeah, beyond that, we find that the powers that be are relating the hypercroniac condition to a failure of their efforts in some way. The hypercroniac will apparently be in no way really visible unless they choose to exhibit somehow their ability relative to or the effect of time on them. There is a subset of this that shades over into the surreal subset, and we suspect that some individuals will join the hypercroniac condition unwittingly and perhaps unwillingly, and that it will seriously upset them, and they may think of this as a new form of mental illness.
That's thrilling.
Yes, it sounds good.
Not if you think you're crazy. Yes, we also have an indication that the fundamental breakthrough or discovery for the new electrics will derive from a understanding of cymatics, the distribution of frequencies through matter, and that this is currently very close to fruition, but we will not hear it until November or so. I do not think it relates to academia nor to the collider. However, the collider will be impacted by whatever the discovery is that is currently being encountered in the laboratories.
Yes.
So that's a good synopsis of what is posted, but much more within the text and a chart showing some of the progression of the problems for the Brits and the French this summer.
Yes, so what you gave us now is a synopsis of part two, that which none of us have read, right?
Correct.
So now I'm going to give the little microphone to those who want to ask you questions. Are you
this
okay
is good.
With that?
Hi, Cliff. This is Roman.
Hello, Roman.
This morning at about 4 o'clock your time, we were very much connected with you in a very beautiful way. And I was just going to ask you, did you notice?
I was meditating at that time. The conscious mind I have has noticed several differences over the last few days within the meditation, and I did indeed have a small peak experience.
Wow, then we were in rhyme. Last night, European time, we had some kind of a breakthrough to a heart space, to a being space. And excuse me, I have to take it easy, the emotions. And this morning, it was really, really intense. First we went into orbit, and then we left orbit. and we very deeply connected beyond many, many boundaries. If anybody could help me or wants to describe this. No, just a sec, yes. Cliff, are you still there?
Yeah, yes, I'm still here.
Now to Alexander, who would like to contribute also to this topic.
Yes, hi. Here is Alexander, and I wanted to ask you, last week I had a special experience at the supermarket. I was standing there and wanted to get to the other end of the supermarket. And then I had to choose if I use room or I use time.
Space.
Sorry, I'm German. And... And then I choose time, and then I jumped, and it was in the supermarket without any people around me, and in a second I was on the other end of the supermarket, and it was I really jumped in time. It was wonderful. What do you say about
it? First I say that I have lived in Mannheim and Frankfurt and Friedrichsburg, so I understand German and German mindset. Then second, this apparently is related to the phenomena that Jay Wiedner describes as the hardening of time. He envisions time as the very tip.
Yeah, I also felt it that I was deep in the heart and using a navigational heart system.
Of a vortex similar to a tornado. And the closer you get to that tip, the harder time becomes, and thus, to a certain degree, the more malleable it becomes to the consciousness field.
Yes, I experienced the last week that it is more and more possible to bend consciousness, to bend time, and to bend space.
And this is one of the reasons that I am studying so diligently in the practice of Aikido. I think we need disciplines in order to gather our tools and our techniques and refine them. Much of what has been passed down to us may not be applicable in this particular time.
I also study Wing Chun.
Oh, very good. And you guys are very close to Costa Danos in Greece with his Ni Kung connection to John Chang in Indonesia.
Hi, Cliff. One thing that's really probably stuck out in my mind more than anything was about the UV rays coming in affecting our plant sources. And I was wondering if you knew any kind of new technology that was coming forth that we could protect our plants besides doing something like greenhouses, if there was some kind of alchemic solution to it, that we could have some kind of solutions to put on our plants or anything that could help us to shield this incoming rays from the plants and from us as well.
Obviously, you're not German. Let us continue, though, and state that probably not. I know of nothing at this point beyond the material that would shield from the UV. The data sets continue to shape up in such a way as to predict the impact of UV radiation in changing agriculture for humans. This will eliminate the long row cultivation. Sure, let me ramble for a second here. The UV rays are showing as eliminating the results of the Green Revolution. The radiation will shut down long row cultivation by machines and giant combine sorts of harvests. This is likely to occur over the next 2, maybe 3 years. So the substitution will be small plot biointensive cultivation under all forms of shielding, including inside buildings. I, for instance, am using woven poly, which reduces the visible light by 20% and the UV by about 17%. The woven poly, I believe it's ethylene, the woven polyethylene fabric is very dense and very heavy, but even in my dome covered with this, even in February, it is possible to feel the actinic rays getting to the point where you're going to have a sunburn. This is highly unusual for our area. Also in our area, the chemtrail spraying is now 4 and 5 levels deep. The supposition that we have is that the radiation from RV will be most acute north of, say, 33 to 35 degrees latitude, as we have a slight thinning of the atmosphere there relative to the bulge of the equator. Thus, we see agriculture as a whole, as an industry, changing over these next 2 years. And this will be on top of the already disastrous crops that we've had for the past 7 years. End of statement.
Okay, I'll just take a breath on that one.
Are you ready?
I'm standing ready.
Can you tell us more about this new state of consciousness?
I can discuss it.
We're experiencing it and we want to know more about. Also on verbal.
Yeah. I'm writing more about this in part 3, and I'm presenting a series of charts that you will see in the metadata section. These charts are going to basically explain the position, and they're going to show via a scatter graph that humanity, prior to the 1900s, had a particular bell curve shape distribution between power-loving individuals and bodhisattvas and Buddhas, necessarily with a large clump of humanity in the middle. As we moved into the 19th century and the 20th century, the powers that be took over the media and education system and caused a shift within the general distribution of the populace relative to the concept of enlightenment or greater consciousness, such that the bulge in the bell curve moved closer to the power-loving end of things, the materialistically bound individual with a very limited scope. As we moved firmly into the 20th century, in the last half of it, the Illuminati had firmly gripped the press and the education system, and a very large shift has occurred, especially in the generations that are now newly young adults, say 16 to 26 years old. The current conditions of the universe are pressuring a rebalancing of that effort. The rebalancing of that effort over time necessarily will shift to the other extreme prior to a normal bell curve distribution. Thus, more and more people will discover within themselves the heightened states of consciousness and or enlightenment that we have seen discussed in the past. Many of these people will find this, as I have stated, unwittingly and unwillingly, and they will assume some level of mental illness because they will be under distress. It will be necessary for those people that have had some skill to guide over such individuals that may not be too traumatized and may be savable. I don't know what the ratio of the population that experiences this effect will be, but the data suggests that some significant numbers, perhaps tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of individuals, will encounter effects that will have them questioning their sanity over these next 2 years. End of statement.
Yes, thanks, Cliff. This is Michael again speaking. This is almost a little bit word by word what I told Kerry Cassidy at some point when I said people will lose it, and then they will also know that they are losing it, and then there will be the others who have passed through the next level. And we have been experiencing this in the last few days. We've been talking about a lot of these things. Anyway, I hand you back to Roman for a moment.
Yes, I'm just continuing where Michael stopped. We could experience this, and I personally experienced this as a very pleasant experience. Actually, like something like coming home, something like being connected with the group. This morning I felt I was really exhausted last night and during the night and in the morning. I felt like a drop to which the ocean came, and then I felt much, much better. Actually, it was totally good. So, end of statement, dear Cliff.
We call this energy in the martial arts tradition ki, ki if you come from Japanese, or qi as the Taoist and the Chinese do. The ki component, the energetic component of universe, is clearly on the rise. Now comes the task of learning the abilities to harmonize and flow with this. It is sometimes very difficult. I personally have issues in large crowds because of the massive disharmonious key being generated. So I have been a recluse these many years developing myself at this stage. Now I move out a little bit more. As Michael has noted, 2009 is the year of movement, of change, of action. I call this transformation, and I too am participating in this. The tools and the techniques that we have available to us will increase over time. I suggest, as a personal preachy sort of advice to people, to undertake a discipline, yoga or whatever is harmonious with you, that reaches into the more esoteric and the key component of reality, because it's going to be very clear. It's very clear to us, especially from the data sets, that very soon it will be walking in ki constantly and aware of material reality at the same time. And it is this juxtaposition, this conjunction, that will be causing most of the problems for the uninitiated. Many tools are available to us. The one I like most is that which concentrates on breath. End of statement.
Hi, this is Johnny here. I have a question about the timing of the economic meltdown, so I'm switching subject matter, so feel free to come back to the conscious issue if you feel like it. But here goes, here's the question. My question is if you could comment on sort of the timing of a ripple effect of the economic meltdown as, if you will, an epicenter in Washington or New York, and how it sort of goes through and sort of affects the Eurozone, Asia, Africa, and Russia, and so on. Thought you, if you could comment on if you have any data in your about that. End of question.
Yes, we have a great deal of data about that because it is a very emotionally hot subject across the entire planet. The issue stems from the actions of the minion class, not the powers that be. Let's leave aside the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Queen of England et al. At the moment, and concentrate on the more public faces of Obama administration and those others that are within the minion class. These individuals are attempting to save a system that has already died. The U.S. dollar, begun in 1913, has within it 99 cents out of 100 cents of debt attached to it, and therefore cannot be saved by yet more debt. The powers that be minion class in New York and in Washington, D.C., are attempting to dig their way out of a hole and will result only in increasing the size and the scope of the hole. The ripples that will occur from that will extend from where we're at now through to the end of February 2011. The most acute part of this phase will initiate in fall, as we say, sometime around or after November 5th, but there will be some form of trigger incident on October 26th. Prior to that period of time, the large summer of hell awakening occurs as more and more of the populace under the control of the minion class, that is to say the US of A, Britain, Australia, Eurozone, South America, Asia, Russia, and Africa, in that order, gradually become aware that their entire life's work has been eliminated through the actions of these very few. Further revelations will come out that will cause separation between the minion class and the larger populace of the planet. Bear in mind now that this effect on the populace will not be equal. There will be many people who will be hugely affected, and some people say in the Amazon, who will not be affected at all. But in the main, the majority of the populace of the planet will be affected by this deepening depression. And it is actually not really a depression as so much as, say, birth pangs or a quickening into something entirely new, which I don't know that we have actually invented just yet. In any event, the seriousness of the economic situation will be very acute from July 14th onward. I think that this may relate to a massive crop failure and or the radiation issues and or the weather changes, which is to say some exogenic forces to the paper debt economic system will intrude in mid-July that will push more pressure on the whole of the situation and break it out into the open in such a way as to have undeniability be a watchword for the collapse of the dollar, such that by the time we get into November, many people on the planet at the level of the regular fellow working in his job will be wondering if the dollar will survive. A very key change. End of statement.
Hi, Cliff. I'm Julie, and first of all, I'd like to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's greatly appreciated. My question is, I experienced some very strange things coming overseas this time that I've never experienced before, security-wise. And I was curious to know what type of difficulties are coming in the near future for travel in and out of the States, and also just movement in general. mainly in the United States, but also in other areas around the planet? And how difficult will it be to become mobile and have the ability to go from point A to point B without hindrance? Over.
Hello. I'm sorry you've experienced the problems in travel. These are to be expected. They come from within the metadata layer that we have a dual name for. It's called restriction on movement, but it also has another side called encounters with scarcity. And both of these are going to affect travel over the near term. But there's also another component, which is the minion class previously spoken of, is desperately seeking ways to remain in power, even as they're noting that their masters, the powers that be, know that components of their plan have failed, and thus things are in a state of stress that they had not anticipated. We can expect that the powers that be and their minion class will attempt to restrict movement in increasing amounts over time, especially these next 2 years. The end of the next 2 years, say 2010 into 2011, will be quite chaotic. Depending on a number of variables that will occur this year relative to the transformation, we might, and I emphasize that word, might see the total isolation of the U.S. by external forces in early 2011. Or we might see a corollary to that, which is a form of self-isolation, as we here in the U.S. work our problems out during that period of time. And in either case, both of those will impact the ability to move around within the U.S. itself. However, there are exogenic events pending which are planetary or solar system or universal wide, and they will impact humanity in ways that our data, while it's hinting at it, is not yet fully predicting. One of these might be the global coastal event, which may, for instance, do away with some portion of the ability to ship goods and people on the ocean. We may also find, however, that there are severe restrictions on airplane travel, not only due to a scarcity of resources, but also due to increasing levels of radiation at high altitude. Bear in mind that the UV radiation is just a subset of the totality of energies from space, which include energies that we are not yet aware. So we may see instances of the powers that be still attempting at some level to keep the air travel industry alive, but at the same time, actual physical damage from people flying in episodes of high radiation. It will only take one or two of those before a lot of the impetus to fly will be removed. There are many other influences to this, and some of which we'll get into in parts 3 and 4 of the current series. End of statement.
Thank you, Cliff. This is Michael again. I'm asking another question now following on to this. In a discussion that we have had for a while now, that's an on and off discussion that comes always back, and the key word is to live above 65 degrees north. Could you talk to this issue a little bit, what your feelings are, what you know about it, or whatever comes to your mind? Over.
Yes, Michael. This is a very key issue. I am above 40 degrees north, which is a marginal position. The powers that be certainly have provided evidence that they believe that whatever has them afraid may not impact anything above 60 degrees. We have several key components of evidence of this, including the seed vault, but also the position of harp, woodpecker, and a few of the other installations that they have going. So there is some evidence and inference that can be derived that indeed above 60 may present a survivable position within the northern hemisphere. The alternative is to understand that below the equator, we may find larger areas that will be unaffected by whatever it is that the powers that be fear. We have Paul Lavoisier saying that the galactic superwave and the solar explosion kind of thing would be northern hemisphere effective more than southern hemisphere effective. And this seems to match the powers that be in terms of how they are acting. That is to say, deep underground to avoid radiation, but also shifting large masses of things north of 60 degrees. This is because they believe the angle of incidence would cause any level of radiation to be minimally effective at that level. And there are some strange things going on with the powers that be relative to the far north of both Russia and Canada. So there is more support than just mere inference. There's actual data points for it. But there's another component to this that is not discussed, and that is the issue of any kind of a crustal shift of the planet. We have to acknowledge that on the equator, the height of the water in the oceans is 13 miles higher than it is at either pole. If we have a crustal shift, the evidence is that no crustal shift in the past has been less than 30 degrees in distance. This is from Hapgood and also Hancock's research. If that's the case, then some significant portion of the planet will have to transfer itself across the equatorial bulge, including that part of the oceans. And so this may negate any supposed safety at any level of the planet, because I would believe such effects to be unpredictable. There is some small amount of evidence that the powers that be are aware of the potential for a crustal shift and its impact, and yet they still believe that above 60 north would be preserved even under those circumstances. End of statement.
Hello, Cliff. This is just coming to me instinctually. One of the things I wanted to ask about is the role of these two time travelers that you spoke about in your on the website. The other thing is, if there's anything that you could say about the new physics and how that impacts on the way in which this whole thing is panning out. Thank you.
Yes, actually, they're not time travelers per se. They're self-described as thieves or liberators. We get a lot of information about the two personalities, oddly enough. Why this should be, I don't know, except that they apparently are very archetypical. They will have a very large effect on the spread of the knowledge of the fundamental breakthrough that's occurring now relative to when their visibility rises in November. A lot of things are going to happen in November. Excuse me. The liberators of this technology are not necessarily key to this new physical understanding of things, but it is a curiosity which we should really divert to note that the powers that be are very upset by the countercultural, to use an old word, shift in understanding about physics, quantum physics, equal consciousness field at all. The powers that be have a very large level of disturbance around this, and they are afraid of its impact as it spreads, such that they have a fear or target date of March of 2010. They suspect that there will be some level of disturbance to their power base as a result of this knowledge alone, and at some point within their structure, they've anticipated that a breakthrough or a bulge in understanding would reach a tipping point as of March of 2010. The new physics in relation to the planetary changes, we do not have a conjunction of those two data sets. It's very difficult for us to do such a conjunction because the size of the Terra entity is massively overwhelming in terms of the lexicon versus the much smaller, much more defined sets of the new physics consciousness field at all. So when we would do a conjunction of those, it would be virtually impossible for us to find the new physics impacting. Now, if that situation were to change in reality such that there would be some discussion about it within the press, as in the idea of a giant headline, so-and-so saved us from meteor with new physics device, or a fellow creates a new anti-gravity device that fits in the palm of your hand, Those kind of things will cause a bubble within our data prior to their occurrence, but we don't yet see any of that. We also need to acknowledge, though, that the chaos that will appear in 2010 and 2011 globally seems to be already predicted to impact both the mainstream media and the dissemination of knowledge across the internet. And this may be due to physical disruption, or such as a solar flare or something, but certainly will be impacted by the social chaos and the resource problems that will arise. We see that there will be electricity issues in 2010 and 2011 that will affect server farms and thus affect the internet. End of statement.
Hello, Cliff. This is Roman again. This morning, we developed around the topic of consciousness, space, and time a new formula, which we partly regard as the first formula of the new mathematics. And one element of looking at this topic as it came up in this fresh moment, we realized that if we further the consciousness factor, the more we further the consciousness factor, the less space the space-time factor dictates upon us. And so we were wondering if we really worked on this, not only in this group, but worldwide, if we could skip on the pole shift. Everybody laughing, end of statement.
I laugh here too. I don't know. That's a really good question. The issue comes down to consciousness as we understand it. The planet is conscious, the universe is conscious, and it is at that universal consciousness level, for instance, that our bodies are created. We do not say this particular atom is air right next to our skin and this particular atom is part of our skin. That is done at a level that we could think of as templates through the universal consciousness field. Now, Buddha described the indivisible unit from his historical knowledge of it. He did not discover enlightenment, he merely experienced it, and that I need to speak about in a second. But he described these as kalapas, or the smallest indivisible unit, which really is not a unit of matter so much as it is the intersection of diverse forms of energy at various levels, such that we perceive those energetic disturbances as solid matter, because bear in mind we are also made of energy. And thus our senses operate at a more gross level than the creation at the universal consciousness level of our bodies. And thus our minds and our senses trick us into thinking 3D world is material. So your statement is correct. I believe that the more people that become conscious of the underlying nature of reality, the less impact that that reality will have on us. And in fact, this is one of the paths of proper training that one goes through if one reads The Science of Yoga or the Yoga Sutras by Patanjali. In the last or fourth book, I believe, he discusses the siddhis, which are these powers or abilities to manipulate reality based on this experiential understanding. Now, this is where things must separate. Let us examine the fact that many people, even going back to, say, 1978 with George Leonard's book, The Silent Pulse, understand the concept of the holonomy, which is to say that all of universe contains within any part of universe all knowledge of the rest of universe, and thus space is not particularly limiting, and we live in a giant holographic field, if you will. However, the intellectual understanding of such is not the same as the experiential understanding of such. And as people become more and more keyed into this, they have a tendency to choose one way or the other. That is to say, there are many scientists who understand the true nature of reality, but do not experience. Then there are many people like myself who are into weird and strange esoteric disciplines, and for the main are on the fringe of society, who both intellectually understand the nature of reality, although we don't necessarily discuss it, but we experience it. And in the experience of that, you get a certain level of power. So, for instance, in 2001, in January of that year, I had certain meditative breakthroughs that allowed me to understand reality a little bit better, and I was able to eliminate from my system a 20-year bout with a disease known as eczema, which is of a skin condition. This skin condition is theoretically not curable. They treat it, but it is known for not going away and forever scarring you. And I had had a 20-year history of it that I cured over the course of 30 days by altering a structure within my consciousness construct. I called it at the time smoothing out the curds in the yogurt, because it seemed as though that's what I was doing within that particular part of my brain, and the eczema went away. So that is an experiential understanding of it. We could go to someone who is a scientist who had an academic understanding of reality that also had eczema, and I doubt they would be able to get inside deep enough to cure it themselves, although our basis of knowledge is the same. Did that make sense? End of statement.
Yes, this makes a lot of sense. Here is Alexander again. I was the one who experienced this formula and write it on the paper. And it was, for me, it was consciousness related to space, related to time, is how you want to see it, equals one, equals zero. And I experienced that now I get more freedom from this room time zone here to interconnect and to begin to get to go into power to change the things I want to change. And I ask you now, there is a special point or a special date in timeline where this is breaking totally true, that I can come to full power of it. And because I never laughed about the thing before, that I said I could change it because I want to change it, because I know that it's possible. But I also know that it is not possible right now at this second.
I understand the question.
From the view of here and now.
The issue for you as an individual will be work, insofar as my understanding. I don't think universe grants us power at all. If you wish to go that route, you must work on it and develop that power yourself. The timeline suggests that the 2012 date, anything from October 2011 through to 2013, is felt by the powers that be as being the point of maximum risk for them, which I believe relates from the condition of our solar system and where it is in universe. This is to say that if we're approaching some form of a nexus and awareness or increase of the consciousness field, you would probably not have to do anything at all, and may still find that over the period of time from 2011 through 2013, you experienced this to a heightened degree. Whether you could control it or not is an individual destiny sort of thing. I am very old, and because the universe has treated me to many different experiences, I recognize that while I may develop power, I'm very uncertain as to my wisdom in the use of that power, so I have tendency to not go that route myself. And it does present risk both on a karmic level as well as a personal or physical level. So I am old. I have finally been wised up by universe, and I don't offer to help individuals anymore. I will respond if they ask, but the offer of help intrudes on their particular karmic process and it also influenced his mind. And the ripples within the energetic fields become so entangled as to boggle what little bit of mind I have left. My personal approach, as I say, is to develop the tools and refine myself and allow universe to decide how and when it wants me to experience things. So those things that can be changed, even if you have the power to change them, might necessarily not be best if changed. End of statement.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And this leads me to the next question that I experience that time is flowing from the future to the past. And therefore, it also makes sense this way for me. What do you think about the time originally flows from future to the past?
I don't feel. That is an academic understanding. Western society, everything from perhaps the Egyptians onward, suggest an understanding of time as a river, and we're standing on the riverbank and it flows past us, emanating from the future and falling into the past. Such is an erroneous view. There is only one moment. There is only one single point in universe. Space is an illusion, and time is an illusion as well. Time, for me, for my understanding, is not available for the future. That is to say that our work does not really suggest that time exists 2 years from now and it's merely a question of us catching up with it, so to speak. We all know that we cannot go back into the past, that anything that is not of this moment, which is to say has already occurred and cannot be revisited except in the form of memory. That is probably the condition that exists within the future as well, which is to say that those things that have not occurred will not occur, cannot occur. So, for instance, you might find these supposed whistleblowers who are discussing the concepts of this timeline versus that timeline versus some other timeline. And that gives an impression to the human mind, especially the monkey mind that likes all the numbers and to do projection, that these are independent streams that could converge on the point that we call now, and that at some instance or nudge by universe, one stream or the other might become the path down which we go. I do not find this understanding to be my own, and I don't know that it is particularly workable, given the reality that the universal consciousness exists in a form of continuous creation. That is to say, atoms do not exist. There is no little tiny rock swinging around another little rock that we call electrons and protons. That is an illusion. Electrons do not spin around neutrons. The protonic mass does not exist. They only exist when we attempt to measure them, and we have made certain assumptions on this that are erroneous. So we must look at universe as originating from a series of pulses to create standing waves that interfere with each other in vast levels of complexity that we call the aggregate tori, which is to say all of the toruses that exist within us. If we were to look at it in a particular way, every single one of our atoms, rather than being a mass per se, whirling around in space, could be thought of as a little miniature torus. And then you have billions of such atoms within your, in fact, trillions upon trillions of such atoms within the various cells that form you as a human, and you are a larger aggregate of a giant accumulation of small toruses or tori. And so, but in a larger sense, as they fractalize through you and form your body from the giant consciousness field, you become a larger tori. That torus experiences time as a progression of events within the mind that is associated with the body. But that does not mean that those events pre-exist or post-exist. It is an illusion, as has been stated repeatedly throughout history, and one should not necessarily think of the time as a stream because it causes certain assumptions to arise that are not true. And these can cause you to think in certain ways and act in certain ways that are not necessarily in your interest. For instance, the people that are saying that this timeline exists and, oh, well, something will occur and we got onto this other timeline and there's no pole shift. They have no basis in reality for stating such. Time only exists at the level of the giant template of universal consciousness that creates such things as space, Earth, Sun, universe, solar system, our bodies, the table next to you, the glass of wine at dinner, and so on. Your mind does not create that. Those are created out of the templates from the universal consciousness expressed through what Buddha called the Kalapa, or the individual unit, which is the collision of all of these energies. So there is only now, and the complexity from which we get expressions of now is vastly large beyond our understanding, and not the small constrained timeline view that might be presented. So I don't think of time as a river with myself standing on the side of the bank of it. I think of myself as swimming in a giant sea of continuous creation, and one small element of the sea washing against my consciousness, if you will, the water against my body, is felt as time. I hope that made sense. End of statement.
I meant not the time quantity, I meant the time quality. Your answer was for me about the time quantities and the linear times, but not the time signatures, if you want, or time qualities. I'm not so good in English.
I understand, and I skirted your point indeed. Let's stop for a second and examine time in the sense of quantity and quality. And let us also, before we begin that, assume that we're all vibrating entities that are composed of nothing but energy. In order for ourselves to exist within universe, the way that, say, a software program or a telephone call might exist in a digital universe, they have to be identified with a unique characteristic. So for in the case of telephone calls, we use phone numbers, etc. So we can think of ourselves as giant vibration of energies, and we each have a unique signature that identifies you, no matter where you might be in physical universe. Even though we know that that physical universe doesn't actually exist and you don't ever actually go anywhere, but in order to find the particular you or me from any others, we would be able to need to know their individual signature. That signature at a vibrational level is what allows, for instance, thoughts to come into your mind and experience it that way. So your experience with the quality of time change, I would believe and can state from my understanding, relates to something being added to your signature state, if you will. It's called a witness reference in science terms, or computer terms. And it, in other words, your universal name, for instance, probably has had something added to it. When we get into the Jain understanding of karma, they also express it by stating that at the time you're born, for instance, certain karma determines the length of your life, the shape of your body, how many teeth are going to need fillings, etc., etc. But your life is not limited to those. It's not a fixed state. You can add or detract from those as you go forward by knowing how karma works. But some karma stems from previous actions and previous lives, and you might think of as a gift, if you will, from universe for having been a good human in a previous life, if you will. And thus, at this particular time, universe has chosen to add something to your personal individual signature within itself that opens you up to more of the experience of the vastness of universe. Now, the issue is that universe may have a large gifting mode going on, but it will be our individual karma, if you will, our individual signatures that are on our vibrational life energies that allow us to perceive some and not perceive others. So getting back to the quality component of time, the quality component of time is the experience of time within the individual mind. And we know that there is a collective understanding of this experience going on at the moment. All through my long life here, I have always experienced each second of that life as slightly smaller than the second before it. Thus, the concept of time rushing as one ages, and how a year at age 50 is a smaller percentage of my life than a year at age 8. And it is experienced that way. However, we may be coming into, and there's evidence to support the idea, that since 1940, our solar system has been gradually moving into an area of space that contains energies of which we know very little. These energies probably have added that extra signature to your witness reference, and thus you are experiencing a quality of time. You may be ahead of the curve, so to speak, from some karmic viewpoint in the past that has decided you're a good fellow and you need to have this now, that you may learn something from it and perhaps take some people through it later on as things progress. And what you're actually experiencing is a level of depth, if you will, a richness that most of us others are not. Or that in my case, I'm experiencing an increased richness in the complexity of the experience of the key fields, but I'm not getting, per se, an extra feeling for time. It is a more broad feeling entirely. And this is undoubtedly directly related to my particular karmic expression within universe at the moment. End of statement.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. deep thank you from my inner heart. I experienced this in the same way, and it's very nice to have these rare answers of these questions. Yes, I'm overwhelmed. Thank you.
Please do not thank me. Universe has obviously decided that we must be discussing this at this point for both of our illumination and education. Still here, a slight hiccup in the software. End of statement.
Hi, Cliff. Could you tell us, if the pole shift goes ahead, what will happen in the really far south, like the south of Argentina? End of statement.
Yes. The evidence that we have from Hapgood must be crossed over to what has been called forbidden archaeology. Hapgood was not, he was an extremely good researcher for the pole shifts, but he had his mind occluded by academic understanding. So, for instance, we can take some data points. Lake Titicaca in the Andes Mountains was at one point sea level, and its oceanic base and its sediments prove this. There are further indications that it went from sea level condition to nearly 11,000 feet over the course of what may have been only 3 or 4 days. The resulting upthrust was such that half the population in existence at that seaport at that time died from the destruction of their local infrastructure. Very large buildings with megalithic stone were shifted, and this is the only place on the planet that we've ever seen destruction of a megalithic structure. So, for instance, earthquakes have never disturbed the Great Pyramids, and they have not altered Angkor Wat, and they haven't affected any of the other larger structures, for instance, in the Mesoamerican era, where places like Machu Picchu all the way up through the various cities in Central America have been essentially earthquake impervious. So whatever happened in Lake Titicaca was related, we think, to this pole shift. Hapgood states that he thought that the upthrust was indeed an effect of a pole shift at the time, but he didn't go into the details on it. But if we look at a globe and examine how the line of the Andes goes on up through the Rockies and a few other elements relative to the crust, we can make some assumptions. But first, before we make the assumptions as to outcome, we should make some presumptions and state that we know a few things about the planet, and we need to open our thinking a bit. So, for instance, planet Earth is not solid. The mantle is not solid. It should be better understood as a collection of rocks that have all decided to snuggle up to each other, and the rocks are various different sizes. And thus it makes it easier for us to imagine some rock masses, such as a particular continent, deciding to subside as it goes through the equator, and others deciding to rise. So given that presumption, then we can go on to certain assumptions. The assumptions from Hapgood state that no pole shift ever occurred that he's been able to find any record of that was less than 30 degrees. A 30-degree pole shift moves some part of the planet through the equator. If you're part of that section of the planet going through the equator, you will have a rough time. Thus, the assumption is that the further away you are from the equator in the transit, the less likelihood that that particular part of the planet you're on would go through the equator. Thus, the sighting of the seed vault up in the Arctic Circle area, because no matter what, if it shifts 30 degrees from where it is at, it will not have to transit through the equatorial rush and all the waters and the problems. This is also likely true of far south, South America, may be true of South Africa, certainly will be true of New Zealand, although Australia offers certain issues, especially relative to what the powers that be are doing there. In other words, if we knew that Australia was to be a survival point, I would think that it might be inimical to the open sovereign individual simply because the powers that be are so heavily ensconced there. Now, South America offers some other issues. There are social movements underway that suggest the powers that be are attempting to consolidate their hold over what might be survival sites. We note the Hyundai Cross points to Cusco, Peru, and the caves that are there. Yet those caves have now been sealed and are under the control of the Peruvian military. Other survival sites within the Latin American or South American mountain ranges are also under stress relative to social conditions coming from the powers that be. Then there's the final issue to consider, and that is that if indeed this pole shift is not like others of the past, and I can discuss some evidence that that is true, then we have some issues with being very high up. It increases your exposure to radiation and so forth. While it might protect you from some sea level sloshing, you're also going to have a hard and rough time of it, and it would not necessarily be an easy level of survival. And again, we don't know if there's going to be a crustal shift or if we're also going to have a continental disappearance. We can look back at this thing called the Narmer Plate. Narmer is the N-A-R-M-A-R is the name that the people gave their country in what we now think of as Pharaohic Egypt. These individuals existed before the pharaohs, and they were the source of the civilization that the pharaohs inherited. And the Egyptians took over, and we always, academic science says the Egyptians invented. This is not true. They were inheritors of things. One of the things that has come down is this hard clay, vitrified clay, stoneware, if you will, plate that describes 11 previous pole shifts. And it puts it in perspective in each and every one of them, saying, for instance, in the pole shift that occurred 48,000 years back, it was a minor deal and caused minor flooding and minor problems to the civilization at the time, but the ones on either side of that by 13,000 years were very severe. And so we know that the last pole shift prior to this one was devastating. And so we can ask ourselves, if universe favors humans, and there seems to be some evidence of that, then will this pole shift be a particularly nasty case relative to the previous ones? And at this stage, we also have to acknowledge one other thing. While there is some small amount of movement by the powers that be relative to a pole shift, the vast majority of their efforts appear to be directed at saving themselves and resources from giant solar explosions. If we're talking a CME, a coronal mass ejection, that actually touches the Earth with our weakened state of magnetosphere now, it would actually come into the Earth's atmosphere. This would be devastating, I think, no matter where on the planet one happened to be, because in the process of consuming all of the forests and all of the other infrastructure above ground, a great deal of the atmosphere would be involved. It may be that the oxygen component would not be truly depleted simply because of the amount of carbon dioxide that would be available for other chemical reactions and thus release oxygen. But that may also not be true. The energetic component of a CME touching the northern hemisphere might create serious problems atmospherically for all of the planet. We just can't say. The powers that be sure seem to be thinking along those lines, though. We say this because there's some information about the seed vault that they have atmospheric control for the seeds. This should only be needed if they suspected that while safe from earthquake or pole shift, there was some danger of the atmosphere becoming so polluted that the seeds would be impacted. Make sense? End of statement.
Yes, makes a lot of sense. This is Gerben again. Many thanks for this. I'm really glad that we, as a human race, at least survived so many moving of the ice, and really hope we will not drop the ball at this point. I have a question. I don't know where you are with time with answering questions, but I have a question about the relation with nature and our human mind, in the sense that the changes that are coming, how much, what does your data says on, or you think about, how much will the change have to depend on, let me rephrase that, how much, if the human mind is to survive, will it depend on what we will do, the humans themselves, the inner changes that we have to go through, or how much will it be like pushed from the outside, so the universe organizing it for us. So basically, do we really have to push this change ourselves to be able to survive, or is this something that the change will just occur and we have just have to go through it and just survive?
I understand the question. My personal view is that humans have very little power. We don't control any circumstances whatsoever. As Buddha stated, you get enlightenment when you realize that everything, including yourself and all your thoughts, are illusion. And this is quite true. We never really have original thoughts. We are simply in a position where our energetic field receives something through its signature, and we think that thought originated with us because it was sent out by universe in such a way as to have our signature on it. Now, bear in mind that universe may send out a particular thought that has trillions upon trillions upon trillions of signatures as preference to this. In an internet fashion, that would be like having an IP address for a huge part of the continent attached to an email message, and it would go to each and every one of those IP addresses, or any of them, if you will, that happened to be turned on at the moment that that was broadcast. So if that's the way that universe works, then we really truly have no control whatsoever. And this is sort of a good thing because we can give ourselves up quite freely to whatever happens. We also need note that no human ever gets out of life alive, and in spite of claims to the contrary. And so death being a natural part of the process, it's, while necessarily a fearful one, can be approached in a fearless manner. And thus, my survival is not up to me. I have no real control over what particular may happen. A tornado can come and snatch me up and deposit me naked in a bunch of mud five states over and alive, and again, none of that is up to me. I merely at that point have only one thing that I can do about anything, and that is my attitude. So if the tornado does that, I will have the proper attitude of saying, well, thank you, tornado. Sorry you had to beat me up to get my attention, but I'm sort of glad to be here and will pay attention to what's going on at the moment. The issue of the survival of any given individual is something that is related to your personal karma affecting your particular signature for the energetic mass that you are. So my commenting on it is meaningless. It's pure speculation. That's why I don't know that there's any given particular safe place. I also accept my own death quite willingly as being part of life. And therefore, universe has placed me, for instance, 135 feet above sea level and placed me in such conditions that I'm not able to harmonize with universe and extract myself from this particular height above sea level. Therefore, it must want me here, and I harmonize with that. It has also given me an inclination from being in a genetic strain going back through the Normans and the Vikings and the Phoenicians and the Celts to the great sea peoples of the past. And therefore, I have this cellular reaction to the oceans and water and boats. I'm harmonizing with that, and I'm building myself a very sturdy little sailboat for such conditions as may arise in the future. But I do so with no illusion that it would be a savior from anything of a catastrophic nature. I do it because universe has presented me with the situation and the conditions and the capabilities to do so, and I enjoy harmonizing with that particular thread. Same thing is true with the meditation. I have no illusions whatsoever that the meditation will present me with an enlightened state such that I could go poof and avoid the whole pole shift should it occur. It probably is quite necessary that I die in that pole shift should it occur. To a certain extent, I take comfort in this because a violent death is at least quick and progresses you along on things very rapidly. Having lived with people who have chosen to die over the course of decades, I choose to go quick. Again, thus my martial arts training and so on that I harmonize with. But let us also note, if one were to look at my birth chart, and you have an excellent resource there with Michael, he will be able to tell you this man's chart is divided pretty much evenly between the feminine and the masculine, but all of the masculine is heavily influenced by the martial fields, if you will, that emanate from Mars or are identified with Mars. So I can't really help the fact that I have an affinity towards the martial arts. The most I can do is decide to harmonize with that and do it as best I can, or to ignore it, given the particular attitude that I have. I find that when I harmonize with universe, things are a lot more cooperative, and I suffer a lot less. Therefore, harmonization is kind of a cool thing. But again, I have no illusions that safety or security exists at all, and let me tell you, that is the greatest freedom of all to recognize and grasp and live that you are dead at this moment. You just haven't gotten to that particular moment at this time. End of statement.
Great stuff. Thanks a lot. I'm just looking around if there are more questions.
I'm prepared for more questions. I don't have a time limit, but I will need to get some coffee in about a half an hour. End of statement.
I just wanted to say something about going poof. I believe that there's a group of people who were, they're called the Bon Po, and in their tradition there's something that they call the rainbow body, and they developed a system where they could actually align with their rainbow body, so instead of the normal death, they would transfer themselves into... So these people actually were able to gather themselves to activate the light in their DNA and actually become their rainbow bodies. So they were able to leave this time space as they chose to. Over.
I understand what you're discussing. It's frequently within the literature that I read. I have some extensive knowledge for a Westerner of Sanskrit and the historical Pali dialogues, and have come across such references before. Also, my personal martial art is Aikido, called the Way of Peace by its founder, who we call Osansei. And Osansei also described the rainbow, he called it the rainbow bridge between heaven and earth, and you could align yourself with that, harmonize with it, and go as you chose throughout space-time, time-space, by choosing particular colors, if you will, or harmonics to go along. And Osansei was a great mystic and a metaphysicist, and I also go along with those traditions. Now, we have, for instance, the six yogas of Naroda, which comes out of Kashmir in Tibet, and he gives six different techniques for getting to that stage, if you will. And the last one is the sixth yoga, and says you could basically do this on your deathbed if you got really clear at that point. The other five are how to more or less achieve it in this life. But it comes back to something else as well. Now, bear in mind, my energetic vibrations are martially oriented, and this gives me a particular squirrely view of reality, because even if I could go poof, I have not the wisdom to decide that that would be an appropriate impact on my karma. It as I say, it may be necessary and desirable and beneficial for myself to go through some rather horrific times, especially relative to the chaos, because I chose to live here at this time. So I don't like the idea of checking out before the movie is over, if that makes sense. Not to say that that is not a valid choice for other individuals. My viewpoint is necessarily colored by the karmic conditions that were set up at my birth, and as a martial artist, my approach is, welcome to my mat, please demonstrate your art that I may demonstrate mine, and the ultimate expression of that art is how I conduct myself through the transit into death. End of statement.
Hi, Cliff. This is Julie again. This isn't quite as deep, but I was curious. There's some stuff up on the internet about Dan Burish in a box, and I was curious if your data had any information about that.
Yes, Julie. I have all kinds of information showing up around Dan Burish because of the amount of verbiage that's associated with him. So, for instance, in our lexicon, we do get information about specific personalities. Excuse me. These personalities have associated with them archetypes. The archetype of Dan Burish and his looking glass business and some of the stuff that he stated make a good story, but we don't have any backing within our lexical discussions to suggest that Dan Burish is in any way as he claims. So, and in fact, there's a lot of the archetypes within the structure that we hold, the context that we hold for Dan Burish in this other subset that would seem to suggest that he's part of a disinformation a situation for whatever reason, personal gain or whatever, I don't know. This brings up, there's several individuals that are out there that keep showing up within our data sets, within the archetypes, and they, for instance, are promulgating, in the case of Dan Burish, the timeline business, which is a fine understanding of things, however limited, but there's no evidence to support that the claims that are being made from these individuals, however cohesive, are anything other than a giant scam, if you will. So it brings up the issue of the gray aliens. A common characteristic of the aliens, as is described by all of the whistleblowers at all levels, no matter how many races they're describing, is that they basically fall into two categories. Those that are like our Earth humans, the Nordics, for instance, or other individuals who look as individuals. They may resemble each other genetically the way that one Norwegian might resemble another Norwegian, but they will have individual characteristics. These individual characteristics set their face apart from any other face, and they fall into what we categorize here at Half Past Human as fifth-order beings. Now, if we look at the gray aliens and the others of their ilk, the little gray aliens, big gray aliens, just doesn't matter. All of these people, all of these beings that are claimed by Burish to be humans devolved in the future, there is a common subset that denies his claim. That common subset is the idea that each and every one of these individuals look identically the same. Now, they have a reason for this theoretically within Dan Burish's storyline, and that is that the DNA degraded to the point where basically they're all clones, and thus they are our descendant, if you will. Not descendants, not progeny, but in a single individual that has been cloned repeatedly. I find this not to be credible. The reason that I find this not to be credible is that all of the gray aliens show themselves consistently to be identical to each other without the ability to have any distinguishing characteristics. The same kind of thing that we find in fourth-order beings, such as insects. If we examine a praying mantis, each and every one of the praying mantises is as though it had been cloned or stamped out of a template. They are a fourth-order being. There are many fourth-order beings here on our planet, and there are also fifth-order beings, such as humans. And you will note that wherever humans get involved with life, such as breeding dogs, cats, horses, anything, we have a tendency to increase diversity, not decrease it. Also, that is the way that universe operates. When DNA degrades as is the case right now. We're in the sixth largest extinction period in our planet's history, and it may well become the largest. It's still growing. We just don't know. But wherever these things occur, mutations are also found, and mutations cause diversity. They do not restrict diversity. So therefore, Burish's whole structure is built on some predicates that I cannot find a reason to support. This causes me to really look at a lot of his other statements. And this is at the same time that we find archetypes within Burish's context that are similar to the archetypes that we find, for instance, with this individual calling himself Dr. Deagle. Now, Dr. Deagle is an interesting character, and he is at the periphery of the consciousness world, if you will. That say that we have Project Camelot as the center of this consciousness world, and it's whirling around. It's collecting at its edge, at its fringe, some individuals which gravitate towards the center. And we see that within the Project Camelot world, that the doctor, that the Dan Burish view timelines and everything is discussed as though it were reality, and no debate is really taking place on that. Some of the same archetypes that are there are also found within Deagle, and having done some background checking on these individuals with reality, I know, for instance, that those archetypes relate back to the shadow government. So thus, for instance, there is a suggestion that Deagle is indeed being paid by the CIA or whoever, NSA, whatever, the one of the shadow governments. I also think that this may be the case with Burish, and that there are some unlikely, very hard to overcome contradictions between the stuff that Burish says and what we can actually find out in reality. So at this point, I don't put much credence in it, and I think that it may be, whether he's wittingly or not doing it, he may be part of a disinformation campaign. Now, Dr. Deagle, I know, is willingly part of this whole thing in terms of what he's doing. Dan Burish, I can't say that he is an agent willingly. He just may be a dupe and may have been in a compartmentalized structure and indeed may have worked for the black ops and the shadow government, but his level of understanding is limited, to say the best. End of statement.
Thank you very much, Cliff. This is Michael again. I'm really glad that you laid it out. I've never dared say to anybody, but maybe like a couple of friends who I really trust, would be to kind of prompt you or ask you to say what you advise us to do, given everything that we know. I mean, we all know now a lot of things together. And so what is your opinion, or what is your advice, your suggestion, what we would be well advised to do in the next, say, 4, 5, 7 months? Over.
Yes, Michael, thank you very much for the time with you, and the questions have been very good for me, very mind-stretching. I really appreciate it, especially on a cold and wet day such as we have here. For the next short term, really my advice always keeps centering down to refine yourself, but again, it's my filter as a martial artist. That there may be something there, though. If you study, for instance, like Michael Sarion and a few other people, they have come to the conclusion that the yogic and martial arts may actually be a counter to something that occurred in our genetic past and may indeed be very beneficial for all individuals as well as the humanity as a whole. The issue of the Greys and their timeline stories and their lies is a very interesting one, how many people refuse to believe or disbelieve. And it's very interesting, I think, too, that the timelines and the gray stories and their apex, their focus, is also within the Mayan calendar range and so on. Now, over the next 5 to 7 months, we can take the approach of becoming involved in the planet and so on, trying to acquire more resources to stash away, this sort of thing. All of these are probably very good things to do, given the short term. But it's probably a very large waste of what I think you might agree is a unique opportunity relative to how the planets are aligned. It would seem as though the planetary alignments are supporting gnosis in the sense of action and change as a personal expression. If that's the case, then this alignment will go away sometime, I think, maybe late 2009 or 2010, early 2010. And between now and then, it just happens to be a very good time where universe is more or less saying, I give you the freedom to go on out and explore these things, and new experiences as that goes should probably be cultivated, just so that we can see that, yes, this is worth it, and no, that is not worth it. The 7 months that we've got coming relative to the powers that be in the minion class and the social structures around us, it is my personal viewpoint that it is probably best to think of this as first century China. First century China was the time where the Qin Empire had been established. The Qin King had collected, I think, 40 or 50 of the larger tribes and formed China as a whole. But it was very, very, very chaotic at the time. There were warlords. It was the beginning of the Shaolin Temple era. There were enlightened individuals coming over the mountains from India that were starting to spread Buddhism, this sort of thing. And during that period of time, it was very chaotic at a social level. But it also seems that in the midst of that terrible chaos, there was also a unique opportunity for a large number of enlightened beings to occur and or to become aware and enlightened. So I think we're at that same sort of a nexus at the moment, and that my personal approach is to refine myself, do those things that are necessary for my family, and the universe has provided me the responsibility for all those beings to provide the love and nurture that they need. But at the same time, to cut out a little bit of space, time for myself to refine my nature and to explore what's going on. And I will leave you with one story, not verifiable, but if we were to just take it at face value, I know an individual who is so advanced spiritually that this individual has some of the cities, the powers that are talked about in the yogic tradition. And one of these powers is the ability to go out into the forest and create from that person's mind a golden palace or a hamburger or a fish, any number of things. This individual has demonstrated this power to me, and while overwhelming initially, there's one key component to that, and that is that the minute that the millisecond that this individual stops projecting that key energy into that reshaping of the illusion of reality, that part of the illusion reverts back to the templates of universal consciousness. I sure hope this makes sense as I explain it. So thus, it is a function of the amount of key energy that one can manipulate internally that allows the cities to exist. They don't exist as superpowers, for instance, when one can just jump up and fly like Superman at any given time. In our real understanding of reality, the power exists only because you've got that key charged up within you. Your battery is full, so to speak, and that you need to be cognizant of how much of that energy one uses and to also do those things that are necessary to recharge that battery. And thus, we come back to the various practices that I'm engaged in, which all lead towards the very fixation of the point, again, goes back to first century China and the arrival of the indigenous Taoist religion, which is not really a religion, but is a scientific understanding, and what was known as the Hui Ming Qing. And it is that process described in that book, Hui Ming Qing, and you can get a good translation by Eva Wong off of Amazon.com, and it is that process that describes what Buddha went through in becoming a Tathagata, which is to say that form of enlightened being that he is. I think that this particular unique period of confluences, which we call time, provides support for any individual that should choose to charge their key battery and then go out and play with that energy. End of statement. And thank you very much, by the way. Very, very engaging.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you, Cliff. One last question. Is it okay that we can post this in the zone? Can you hear me still?
Yes, I can hear you still. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Please go ahead and post. End of statement.
Thank you very much, Cliff. Everyone here thanks you very, very much, okay?
Well, bye, all. I'm going to go down and get my coffee now. Thank you. End of call.